Hey there, and welcome to the latest episode of Mobile Wallet Marketing Made Easy, the podcast that helps you navigate the ever-changing landscape of mobile marketing. Hi there, I'm Kim Stewart.
And I'm Hazel Fruitman.
And we've got a new podcast episode for you today. We're discussing the latest in cannabis news, which is going to include California's brand new adult recreational, or casual as the California term is for it, along with the Attorney General's rescission of the Cole memo. And one thing I'm going to say, I had no idea that rescission was an actual term for having rescinded something.
Yeah,
we did. So we learned a new vocabulary word today. It was very unexpected when we woke up yesterday. And so we're going to talk about what we think based on current rules and regulations or lack thereof that may be happening when it comes to cannabis banking or perhaps not. This is our first episode of the new year, and we swapped our original first episode that we recorded a couple days ago and moved that to the second episode, so that one may be confusing when you listen to it in a couple of weeks. We hope everybody had a great holiday season and you're ready to move into the new year with a positive attitude. We've got a lot to talk about. If you're a first-time listener, our podcast is generally designed to talk about mobile marketing, and we also deal with a lot of state legal cannabis companies. We started doing this a couple years ago. And so last year we expanded our business to include banking and processing.
We also recently launched a new facet to our existing business in the cannabis industry, and that's cannabis related consulting.
Right. And it probably couldn't come at a better time. If you're in need of a consultant for the business bits and pieces that don't revolve around getting a license, then we would love to talk to you. We are not in the licensing or the licensing application side of the industry. There are plenty of good companies out there who already do that. It's kind of perfect timing that our first podcast of the new year has now been changed to a cannabis-related one. So we're going to skip the mobile wallet marketing bits, and we're just going to run you through what we know and what we don't know yet about California, the loss of the Cole memo, and how things may shake out in the short term and over the next few months with banking and transaction processing. So the first thing that we're going to point out here is in regards to the Cole memo and the FinCEN guidance. And the big deal with those is that neither of them have or would have been able to ever have the force of law behind them. In a couple of previous podcasts about the Cole memo and FinCEN guidance and marijuana banking, I think those were episodes probably like 51 and 53. It was from November last year. It was a two-part show, and we talked about how guidance actually works, how the current laws are structured, and how the budget appropriations bill impacts the federal government's ability to prosecute crimes that occur in marijuana.
And the second thing, Cole was only ever about medical marijuana. The language was specific to that, and it had no provisions for adult use, casual, or recreational use cannabis. Of course, back then, there were no states that had rec use actually in operation, so that's understandable.
Right. So the rescission of Cole, while it's not an insurmountable obstacle, it is very likely to give a lot of banks pause, if for no other reason than to get a little breathing room, regroup, and wait and see how they need to proceed based on what federal prosecutors in their individual states say they're going to do or not do. I mean, I cannot see it going any other way. It's my personal opinion that financial institutions who are already in the business of banking adult or recreational or casual use, call it whatever you want to, they're already aware of the fact that they have no protection, imagined or otherwise, because they are facilitating the sale of non-medical use cannabis.
And in the segment I would call Crazy News Reactions to the Sessions Play, the Vermont House passed a bill Thursday night to legalize recreational possession of marijuana just hours after Attorney General Jeff Sessions rescinded a Department of Justice policy on legal marijuana. Do you have any other thoughts on the Sessions situation before we move back to the original podcast topic?
Well, yes, I do.
All right.
Thanks for asking. You know, I find the timing of this entire situation to be a little on the suspect side. 2 weeks ago, the week of Christmas, Sessions released a list of guidances that were being rescinded. and Cole was not on the list. There were 25, and it was not one of them. So why would you come back out of the blue and do it now and do it with no warning? And, you know, timing-wise, I don't believe in coincidences, so why would you do this on a day that just happened to coincide with the president having a public feud with the author, Michael Wolff, who was releasing a book about him, and with Steve Bannon as well? I mean, it almost seems to me like a smoke and mirrors kind of wag the dog diversion. Now, I will say that the part of the new verbiage that I find disturbing is about the part where it specifically says, including federal law enforcement priorities set by the Attorney General. We keep hearing about how there's going to be prosecutorial direction and discretion. You know, if you take the statement at its most literal meaning, it's pretty much saying, hey, do whatever you want until I tell you to do otherwise to the federally appointed prosecutors. Now, we don't want to confuse federal prosecutors with state attorney generals. They're totally different people. The federally appointed attorneys are appointed by the Department of Justice. The attorney general of a state in 43 of our American states is directly elected by the people. Now, the state legislature in Maine appoints an attorney general. The Tennessee Supreme Court appoints an attorney general. And the other five states, I don't have the list right in front of me, are appointed by the governor. So while the federal government doesn't have a lot to do with these guys, you know, this is a different court. It's a state court and not at the federal level.
So how do you think this might be addressed at the national level, or do you think that?
Well, strangely enough, the more that I kind of ponder this in my mind, I think that we are going to see some legislation at the federal level passed, probably in the next few weeks, and I believe that it's going to give protection to the existing industry. So I don't know how the wording is going to go, but I'm guessing that most of the states who have active cannabis laws, they're not going to put their current licensees out of business. They're going to want to create a means to protect them, but yet legalize cannabis at some sort of a federal level. And that's just my personal bet.
I hear you. So let's move back to talking about banking the industry. And we'll do it with the understanding that banks, at least a number of them, are going to keep on working with companies in the industry. And we're going to continue to help cannabis customers get their organizations prepped and ready to go for banking.
Cool. Sounds like a plan to me.
There are a number of solutions out there today. Some are for banking cannabis, some are for processing non-cash transactions in the industry, and we'll be discussing the pros and cons of a few of those things as well during this episode. And if you aren't familiar with any of our older episodes, you can find them at dominoresearch.com/podcast. The library includes the mobile marketing episodes as well as the cannabis-specific episodes. A couple you might want to listen to for sure, and I think Kim mentioned these before, if you're involved in the cannabis industry, includes a two-part series we ran in late November as a lead-up to the MJ BizCon trade show in Las Vegas.
Early November,
thank you. So it's part one is the Cole memo and its origins, and part two is about the FinCEN guidance that builds on the Cole memo.
Right, and you know, at least for the moment, the FinCEN guidance is still in place, although I have to say it's a toss-up as to whether or not it will stay there. You know what? It's entirely possible that we may have some sort of action in Congress by next week when this podcast actually hits the airwaves. You know, and if not, it'll be exactly what it is, the same as it has been. So let's talk about what guidance means. If you're not clear on the term, let's do a quick fill-in. It's a term that's used to describe a policy of sorts enacted by various government agencies. And guidance does not have the force of law, but it more tells agencies how to interpret existing laws or how to handle marginal situations. And, you know, states deciding to legalize cannabis while it's still federally prohibited under the Controlled Substances Act, that's kind of a situation. You know, we talked briefly a minute ago about how the week of Christmas in December that Sessions rescinded a bunch of different guidance. And one of those was a 2016 memo about how the courts must consider alternatives to incarceration for indigent defendants unable to pay fines and fees. But it gives no new guidance for how the courts should handle these type of situations. So what I find there is kind of interesting. If you couple this with Sessions' newfound, I'm going to call it zeal, for civil asset forfeiture, there could be no end to the speculation on how much of a boost he may be willing to give his friends in the private prison business by refusing to allow the courts to be more creative with alternative punishments.
Yes, it's interesting that your government is moving to create what seems to be much more draconian scheme for handling a lot of what seems to be minor violations.
Well, it's really potentially Nixonian in my government right now, but it's probably going to get worse before... I know, I just thought of that today. It's probably going to get worse before it gets better. Since this is not yet a political podcast, but one that deals with running a better business, I'm just going to leave that one alone.
Okay, so let's move back to our intended topic now that we've had our personal commentary on the state of things.
Sure thing. Okay, so California's new laws are on everybody's front page lately, whether it's the New York Times, Forbes, more local sources like the Los Angeles Times, the Sacramento Bee, or the San Jose Mercury News. It's everywhere. NPR, ABC, it's everywhere today, yesterday and today. So when I was in LA back in November for the NCIA quarterly caucus meeting, and you know what, if you happen to be an NCIA member and a listener, I'm going to suggest that you sign up and you attend these meetings. It's not only a fantastic place to network, it's also a brilliant way to keep up with how your monthly dues are being spent to help the industry progress with legislation and lobbying. The next set are starting next week. I will have attended the Oakland meeting by the time this podcast goes live, typically. Southern California is next week in Newport Beach, and so if you're in the Long Beach, Orange County, San Diego area, seriously, LA, you really want to go. One of the speakers in November was Kat Packer, who is the new LA City cannabis czar. God, I hate that term. And she is just a totally amazing person. You know, she announced recently that it would take a few weeks for LA City, and this was before the whole Sessions announcement yesterday, that it would take LA City a while, potentially a few weeks, to get sorted out on licensing. You know, I'm sure that there are plenty of people who would rather she hurries up with the process and starts enabling LA City business owners to sell their stock to consenting adults who don't happen to have a medical card.
Ah, yes. California has an interesting take on how to handle their licensing, definitely different from my native Canada. I'm surprised, really, at the way the state seems to have thrown the licensing back into the local jurisdiction. But I guess that's the way the ballot initiative laid it out, at least in principle. I've also read that the same people who wrote the Nevada initiative were directly responsible for the California wording. So it will be interesting to see what happens with the distribution angle, and whether or not it turns out to be a fine mess like it turned out in Nevada, when none of the alcohol distributors actually applied to become licensed transporters for the product.
Oh yeah, that was a complete mess, and it's still going on. And, you know, while the Nevada Supreme Court, the state Supreme Court, stopped the state from issuing any new licenses to distributors under the emergency declaration, they did leave all the ones that had been issued in place, so while they're duking it out in court over who's going to actually do the transport and distribution, all the dispensaries that aren't integrated with their own grow facilities, they can still get their product and sell it at retail.
So California decided to combine the old medical with the new recreational into a single set of regulations, the Medicinal and Adult Use Cannabis Regulation and Safety Act, which is a super long name that winds up being called the MAUCRSA. And it doesn't really have a snazzy way of turning it into something easier to say. And they did this to try and get more comprehensive oversight on things.
Well, that is the way they presented it. The initiative allows for possessing, transporting, and sharing up to an ounce of cannabis and 8 grams of concentrate, as well as growing as many as 6 plants at your home. But, you know, California has a long history with medical marijuana, And it's maybe not such a great history with regulating or licensing or collecting taxes due. And, you know, it's just been such a big part of the state for the last two decades. And so many of the people who have been involved in the industry over the past 20 years, well, they're not really thrilled with the idea that now they've got to get licensed, get legal, and start handing over a decent-sized chunk of their revenue to the government.
Well, I can't say really that I blame them, but at the end of the day, if companies aren't willing to get their ducks in a row, someone else who will play the game will come in and take their place. And that's just how it's going to be. The government has decided that there is too much money out there floating around untaxed, and the states are all in need of more revenue these days.
Yeah, I think that pretty much sums it up. You know, California's been trying to figure out the means and the method to deal with what is by far and away the largest amount of cash from any product outside of casinos, but the fly in the ointment, it remains the banking situation. And, you know, we discussed this in the previous episodes, the ones we mentioned, 51 and 53. The entire notion of banking cannabis is sadly misunderstood, terribly misrepresented, and I think it's just a potential powder keg for everyone involved. I mean, it is still today my opinion that legitimate banking is possible under FinCEN, but it has to be done in a very specific manner.
And there are banks and credit unions out there who are transparently banking the industry right now. Just not many of them, and certainly not for every business in the industry. I think the latest total is somewhere around the 400 range out of about 12,000 or so total financial institutions in the U.S.
Yep, that appears to be correct, or as close to correct as we can discern from the Treasury reports about the marijuana SARs that are being turned in. Now, the last one just came out a few days ago this week, and it covers the period through the end of September. So we seem to have crossed the 400 barrier in total count of financial institutions. But I do kind of wonder, since the information that FinCEN provides in the reports is how many of those termination reports are from institutions that had and continue to have no interest in banking the industry, but they just happened to find themselves with a couple of marijuana accounts that they killed, and they decided to cover their ass by sending in the termination paperwork. You know, the interesting thing in California as well is that the idea of public banks seems to have taken hold, and that the state, along with cities like Los Angeles and Oakland, seem to think that creating public banks would solve the problem of all this cash.
Well, perhaps, but not very likely.
No, and in a nutshell, here's why. So first, this FDIC insurance thing that everybody talks about?
Yes.
I think it's a complete red herring. From the standpoint of cannabis business owners, at least the successful ones, having $250,000 of insurance on your bank account, that's pretty trivial. They'll either blow by that figure in a couple of weeks, or they're just so used to having no insurance on their money that they don't really care. You know, the reality of a bank is not that you have an insured account. There are plenty of non-insured accounts that exist in a lot of industries, especially in things like mobile wallets and e-wallets and crypto wallets. You know, the reality of a bank is that you are able to take your money and use it electronically, which is a much more efficient way to handle transactions.
Not to mention a much safer way to handle transactions.
Exactly. I mean, when you can turn a dollar into a zero or a one electronically, you no longer need to carry those dollars around in a backpack, trying to buy enough gift cards to make payroll, or taking a duffel bag full of cash to City Hall to pay your taxes.
So why does the idea of a public bank not fly so well, in your opinion, exactly?
Oh, right. So the problem is the electronic movement of the funds. You know, the one or two things, rather, that make a bank or a credit union different from a big old safe is the ability to move money electronically. ABA routing numbers and SWIFT codes are how money is moved domestically and internationally, respectively. And without those numbers, you don't really have a bank.
So this goes back to the Fourth Corner Credit Union in Colorado situation.
Yes. It does. It really doesn't matter if you're a state-chartered public bank or if you are a state-chartered private credit union. If the Federal Reserve refuses to allow you access to the electronic funding system, then you're only able to move money between customers inside your bank. You can't get the money out via check, wire, ACH, EFT, whatever, to pay other vendors or employees or anyone who isn't banking with that specific institution. You know, it's also very unlikely, even more so today, that we're going to see a slew of federal judges decide that federal law doesn't matter and that the states can make up their own laws to suit them. Even though we know from a lot of polls and surveys that Americans, 91% of them, favor legalizing medical marijuana and 60%+ favor legalizing all marijuana.
Yes, we have the same situation in Canada, and we've got an upcoming podcast episode about how our Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, is all of a sudden backtracking on the effective dates of legalizing adult-use cannabis in the country, all of a sudden. Let's take a minute and talk about some of the so-called alternatives to cash in the industry, and then we can talk about why they maybe aren't really all that important in the scheme of things.
Sure. You know what? And they're even less important today, if you ask me. There are any number of companies who have, and you know what, in the spirit of full disclosure, we do work with some of these companies who have alternate methods for processing transactions. You know, whether it's PIN debit machines at the point of sale, whether it's gift cards, using proprietary cards with preloads, ACH or Check 21 solutions. And, you know, God forbid these people try to put cryptocurrency in as an option. That's a terrible idea. You know, at the end of the day, this doesn't actually change the policy of the federal government. It doesn't change the policy of companies like Visa or MasterCard or American Express. And, you know, they do prohibit using their systems for marijuana transactions.
And as you said, we do work with some of these companies, and we understand that some of them are violating the terms of service of the platforms they are enabling. And it's mostly just a temporarily situation to a problem, not something that is going to be a long-term way to get the cash off the streets and out of the dispensaries.
True. But I think that people tend to forget that cash is not going to go away, and it's definitely not going to become a non-issue with marijuana. You know, as long as there's still some stigma left to cultivation, processing, sale, or use of products, people are still going to want to pay in cash.
I would agree with that comment for sure. So moving on, there's the treasurer's report from the state that the working group inputted the results of their research and stakeholder meetings and so on for this, yes?
Yeah, you know, it's really, in my opinion, more of an overview as opposed to an actual working plan to deal with the money.
And the current reported revenue just from medical use in California is more than the cumulative reported revenue in total from Arizona, Colorado, Nevada, Oregon, and Washington, if I recall reading the totals, right?
Yep, that is the case. And you know what? We're talking about just the reported revenue. We pretty much know that there's likely as much, if not more, unreported revenue at the moment as there is legitimate money working its way through the system.
So I'm going to bring up the side of the industry that's been living in the shadows for the past 20 years. The guys that are faced with having to run their businesses legitimately when they perhaps haven't been paying taxes, or maybe not all of their taxes, for the better part of the time they've been in business. And now they have to spend the money on licensing, testing, auditing, banking, and the rest of the costs associated with bringing their business into the current structure and in line with new regulations.
Right. I mean, it's hard to say what's going to happen with them. One of the big sells in the voter initiative process in California, for instance, was that small farmers would not be run out of business by big conglomerates. So in the end, while they said that you could only have a 1-acre farm, they didn't put a limit on the number of licenses that one entity could acquire. So it's possible that some companies or many people will obtain multiple licenses and create super farms, for lack of a better term.
And these people have funding and business acumen and experience on their side. so they know how to navigate the waters of legislation and licensing to run their businesses in a manner that's going to be more of a long-term setup.
Yes, that is likely where this is going to end up, regardless of the banking situation. You know, the people that most need to get their act together are not doing that. And I think that regardless of what happens at the federal level, if there is no, okay, regardless is a strong word, unless there's some federal provision to legalize, you know, in the state of California, I think we're going to start seeing license violations and suspensions happening by the end of spring, first part of summer.
So what should people do about getting a bank account? How can they start prepping for legitimacy?
Well, okay, that part, obviously, as we know, is not rocket science. But it does take some critical thinking about setup of a business, and it's likely to require an accountant or a tax attorney or likely both.
Right. I'm running into people that want to apply for deposit banking or for transaction processing, but they don't want to supply the documentation and the paperwork that's needed for submitting the applications to the banks and credit unions.
Well, as you know, and as I know, they are going to have to do that or they won't get banked. No matter what changes are made to any laws, you know, municipalities are looking for ways to cut their processing time and costs for handling these taxes. And some of them are likely to start requiring cannabis businesses to pay using something besides cash. And depending on what happens, you know, with the federal law, that could happen sooner rather than later. So I don't know what necessarily the besides cash is going to be. You know, it may be pay by check or use electronic funds transfers, for instance.
Yes, pay by check. There's at least one company that's pushing a cashless transaction system that is based on ACH, but I'm having a hard time understanding why someone wouldn't just write a check if they have a bank account and can use the ACH system.
Okay, well, that is kind of another smoke and mirrors. Most of the time, if you have a bank account, you can write a check. You can take a check. You don't need an app to manage transactions. Not every bank account, it turns out, offers their customers, especially in cannabis, this provision, which is kind of crazy. But I think we're going to see a lot of big mainstream changes, like you say, very shortly here in the next few weeks. So, you know, but we don't have enough information. So let's get back to the wrap up for this particular episode. Right now, the banking system is even more in limbo. California doesn't have anything special going on other than business as usual. As a matter of fact, just about everybody in California is like, oh, screw it, it's business as usual. The likelihood of getting a public bank up and running in the next 18 months is probably not going to happen, especially in light of the fact that we now kind of need to wait for some serious federal legislative guidance. Yeah, Sessions is off the rails, and everybody from the Koch brothers to the Republican governors, not to mention the Democrats, everybody's telling him to back off. You know, Trump is apparently in trouble again and appears to be looking for a diversion. And you know what? Before this podcast actually hits its release date, who knows what may happen?
That's right. Well, and that leaves us with the same old, same old.
Well, okay, same old, same old. We've still got great blog entries on cannabiswallet.net that give you specific details on how to start setting your business up to be successful. That's cannabiswallet.net/cannabis-business-banking. It's a list of the things that you need to get started. We're not giving you legal advice. We're not giving you accounting advice. We're simply telling you that if you are interested in getting a business bank account, we've got a list of documents that you're going to need. You're going to have those, whether you're looking for a deposit account, whether you're looking for some alternate transaction payment method. Banking regulations require this information, and that will not change regardless of federal law or state law or anything else.
All right. Well, okay then. And then that's it, all the time we have for right now. So we'll sign off and we'll see you next time on Mobile Wallet Marketing Made Easy.
Super.